Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack, and today our guest is Justin Moy. And at 18, he faced the tough world of the Bay Area real estate sales, enduring 6 months of relentless cold calls without a single success. He was on the brink of actually giving up, but a last-minute lead on his dashboard turned things around for him, resulting in his first listing and a $60,000 commission. So I'm super excited to hear more about your story, what you're doing now, how that led into where you are today within real estate. So Justin, welcome to the show, and how are you?
Yeah, Eileen, thanks so much for having me. I am doing great. Excited to be here and excited to just talk about our story, our journey, and how I got from there, miserably failing for 6 months straight, to what we do now.
All right, Justin. So can you share a little bit more about your background and how did you even get started first in real estate?
Yeah, so I've always been very interested in real estate and I can't really explain why. You know, my parents were not real estate investors or entrepreneurs. My family was not real estate related. My family was actually pretty anti-real estate and they didn't like it because my uncles had a rental property and had just had like the worst case scenario. He had a tenant who actually poured cement down the drains. And so obviously that's a massive, massive overhaul of everything you got to do. So ever since then, my family always said, hey, real estate is extremely risky. You should never invest in real estate. Everybody who does it loses a lot of money, or they're ultra millionaires and they can afford to lose money and it doesn't affect them. So I always shied away from it. At least owning. Now, when I was 17, I got my first job in an office as an intern at a commercial real estate company. And I just loved that. I thought that disease was so infectious. I loved seeing them running in and out and selling warehouses and strip malls and development deals. And I thought all that was so cool. So I said, okay, I want a broker. And to me, that was a way to be involved in real estate, but not take on the extremely risky strategy of owning. So that's why, you know, when I was 18, I got my license and, you know, as you alluded in the beginning of the story, didn't go so hot for the first 6 months, but after you get that first listing, the momentum kind of builds off of that. And, you know, through that journey, I was looking at ways to create longer term wealth with my higher income that I was making, stumbled upon commercial real estate because I didn't really feel like it made sense to store all your money in a retirement account and then, you know, get it when you're 70. So I looked at how I could retire much earlier and found commercial real estate to really be that goal. So that's really the 10,000 foot view.
So before we get to like what you're doing today and how you transitioned and got into more of the commercial real estate side of things, at that time when you were trying to break into the business at 18 years old, for 6 months, you didn't have any sales, you weren't making much traction. What continued to keep you motivated? And then what was a turning point for you that allowed you to make that first deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was motivated because part of me didn't realize how long I was doing it without any success. You know, the days and the weeks just kind of blend in together. And thankfully, I was 18 and I was living with my parents. So it wasn't a massive deal that I wasn't making money. But obviously, you know, I had never worked so hard in my life at the time. And to be making $0 was pretty, pretty disheartening. So, you know, it was 6 months to the day that you tell that story. And that's really what kind of broke me down is I realized, oh my God, it's been 6 whole months and I haven't done anything with this. You know, what am I doing here? So part of it was the ignorance of the timing. I just didn't know how long it had been. And the other part was I was ready to quit and I was actually already made up my mind that I was going to quit before I called my final lead. I called them and I half-assed my script. I almost hoped that they didn't pick up. I didn't even care what was going to happen. And, you know, when I got that first deal, it was just the burst of energy that I needed. So that really kept me married to the process. And I started to understand that, you know, things that are worth having are extremely hard to get. And if you expect them to be hard to get, you don't have this disappointment when you are working and not feeling like you're getting anywhere. So part of it was ignorance, but it was an amazing learning lesson that I've taken throughout my entire career since.
So then from that point afterwards, when you started to look at a different way of investing and the world of real estate started to not be so scary and what your parents had told you to begin with, because now you're in the space, you've gotten the education around it, you've seen other people do it, you're surrounded by the people who've already been doing it at the same time. What happened after that? What did you start to do?
Yeah. So, you know, my biggest goal was I was making a ton of money and I was really burning out. And the daunting thought over me was, you know, at the time I was, of course, 19 years old, I think at this point, maybe 20. And I just thought, you know, can I do this for 40 more years? Is this what I want my life to become? Just working all the time. And I enjoyed what I do and I love what I do now, but my parents didn't really like what they did. And so they painted this picture of working as like, oh, you just put your head down, you do it, you bite the bullet, and you know, for 40 hours a week, you come home and you just kind of coast through. And I just thought, well, I really don't want that. So my focus started going to, okay, I make good money now. How am I going to capitalize on this and buy back my time in the future? I know investing is good. And okay, maybe I look at dividend stocks. Can I live off of the dividends? You know, and I was really, really researching for years. I wanted to find that path. Was it businesses or a vending machine that I looked into? There are like paper routes you could buy. Like I was just looking at anything I could to possibly get out of that lifestyle. And throughout selling real estate, I had sort of found a niche with investors, kind of by accident. I saw the life they were living. I saw, you know, every time I needed a contract from them or needed to call them, they were in an island somewhere or on a boat or, you know, they were just living this great life. So I thought, okay, maybe they're all successful. Maybe there's something to this. Now in the Bay Area, you're not typically cash flowing real estate. So it's a different game that they're playing, but that's when I really started to realize, okay, I'm buying and selling homes on behalf of a lot of great investors who are living a lot of great lives. Maybe this is viable and maybe my uncle just had a really bad experience, which it turned out was the case. And that's when real estate as an investment became very viable for me. And when I crunched the numbers, I just got so much more excited about the commercial side and single family. So that's really when I decided to dive in both feet into the commercial space.
So what was your first deal then as an investor?
Yeah, the first deal we actually bought was a 40-unit apartment complex. So I skipped the fourplex, for better or for worse. You know, we made a lot of mistakes on that deal. We didn't take on any outside investors, thankfully. The deal went just fine, but it could have gone a lot better if we had known what we were doing. So, you know, it was a great learning experience. Jumped into the 40-unit. After that was 144 unit. And then, you know, we did short-term rental funds and we've done other, you know, 200 unit apartment complexes that we've recently closed on this year. And, you know, we keep planning on doing more. So, you know, we jumped in a little bit bigger than what most people would do right off the bat, but you know, I'm happier that way.
So the first deal that you did as an investor was a 40 unit complex. Was that in San Francisco or was that out of the market?
No, it was actually in St. Louis County. So, you know, I was always really interested in the Midwest, especially recently over the past year, about 4 or 5 years, where you're seeing this, you know, there's a bunch of terms for it, the flight to affordability, or, you know, they're kind of getting out of these primary markets just because things are so expensive. But you look at the Midwest and you see a lot of these markets that are still very affordable. You see very strong rent to income ratios. You see slow, steady, and consistent growth. So you don't see these massive booms and busts like some other markets might see. You see a lot of income diversity. So I tend to lean more on that slow and steady consistent progress as opposed to the big primary markets that see these massive booms and you know, are less predictable in my opinion. So the Midwest always interested me. So I spent a couple of years just researching where to go, what to invest in, where to invest. And you know, that was the first opportunity we found that worked well. And it just came together.
So can you share a little bit more about the process and the steps that you had to take in order to, you know, find the deal and then acquire that 40 unit property? And then maybe some of the mistakes or challenges that you had to face as, you know, first time investor in a 40 unit complex, which is like a single family.
Yeah, I think the lessons are pretty similar no matter what size property you buy. So there's a massive underwriting process. And anybody who invests in real estate, you make your money on your buy. So you sift through a lot of deals that don't work to find the one that finally does. Then you got to put in a couple offers before you get the one that you get. So it's a bit of a process. You know, I probably spent 2 years underwriting at least 5 deals a day just to get the deal in St. Louis to work out and to work out well. So yeah, we ended up going through a lot of underwriting, a lot of deal evaluation, finally landed on that one. And I'd say the biggest mistake I made was I really bought into this idea of owning real estate as being passive income. When you own real estate, you have a job to do. If you want it to be passive, become an investor. That's the biggest takeaway that I had there. You know, we thought that we could just hire a manager, hire a contractor, they would do all the work and, you know, we'd be done. But, you know, contractors will steal from you. They stole from us. Property managers will, you know, put poor tenants in there to pad their numbers. And, you know, they're not immune to lying or fibbing the truth or stealing from you as well. So you have to deal with banks and contractors and city inspections. Like, there's just so much on your plate when you acquire property that if you buy a property with the intent of it being passive income, you might make a little bit of money, but you're going to leave most of it on the table. If you want to be passive, don't buy real estate, invest in real estate. I think that's the number one thing that I learned on that journey, because it was a lot more work than I thought that it was. And it was at the time more than I was able to take on. And that burned us a little bit. Now, we still did okay, but of course it would have been much better if we would have been ready for that challenge and committing the time to really work in that property.
And when you say we, did you have other partners with you on this deal as well?
Yeah, we had three other partners. So we all, you know, put in money and contributed in our own ways, and kind of had our verticals of what we did. But again, this was like a side project for us. Nobody was living in St. Louis. Nobody was a 40 unit complex owner or manager. You know, we all had our own things that were in real estate, just not in that. And that learning curve was a little bit steeper than I thought. So to me, that's one thing I would do, is I would really look for experience in that partnership and really be committed and ready to do the work and put in the hours.
And that first deal then, was it structured more as a joint venture? Or I don't remember if you said that you brought in other investors to
the deal. That was a joint venture. Yeah, we didn't have outside investors beyond just the partnership, which was just a blessing in disguise, because, you know, really, we wouldn't have been able to answer some of the questions that investors would ask. But we were learning. So it was a great learning experience for us to start raising money for future deals. And we learned a lot from it.
So what happened after that? Do you still have the property today? And then what got you to the next property?
Yeah, so that was, you know, just about 5 years ago. So we still have the property today. I think we were talking before we recorded, we were going to sell it, but of course things kind of went a little bit sideways with the market. So see if we can hold that on for another year or 2 years and be in a little better spot. But you know, what we do now is we actually don't manage properties ourselves. So we create funds and we manage larger funds for other institutional size operators, because really what you want to do, if you want to operate properties extraordinarily efficiently and hit a lot of scale, it takes a lot of infrastructure. So we looked at our business and said, hey, do we want to bring on staffing, bring on things like vertical property management, vertical construction management, hiring people, firing people, remote offices in different locations that we want to buy, different managers for different asset classes and asset types. You know, it's this massive undertaking. And we said, well, we maybe don't want to do that, but what we're really good at doing is managing funds and bringing investors and vetting opportunities and doing due diligence on properties. So let's just narrow our focus, do that for other people who already have this massive infrastructure in place, and we can really leverage our strengths. So that's what we do now. And it allows us to, another big pro is it allows us to diversify what we do. Now our investors are not pigeonholed into multifamily in the Midwest, which is what we know, but we can invest in all sorts of asset classes all over the country because we partner with experts in those areas and with those assets.
Got it. So when you decided to start the fund, can you share a little bit, because this is the first time you're bringing also outside investors into a type of fund model that you guys were creating. How was that process for you guys and where did you start?
Yeah. So, you know, it started, we did raise funds for our second property that we had purchased. We raised about $3 million. And since then, you know, we've raised, I can't even keep track anymore. I mean, we've done 200 unit apartment complexes. There's a fund, the short-term rental fund, that has just about 110 properties in it. So we've been a little bit, and these are opportunities that we wouldn't be able to capitalize on just with our team and our expertise. You know, the partnerships really make it possible. So we've been raising money for a decent amount of time now, about 4 years, and we've really liked the diversity we're able to offer and the expertise we're willing to lend our investors. So now at this point, we're able to offer so many more things that we couldn't offer on our own, even things outside of the scope that we've been able to do, like debt or hard money funds or higher cash flow investments. So it's really provided a lot of diversification, a lot of opportunity for us to focus just on our strength, which is pulling together investors, creating these larger funds so that we can invest in bigger deals with better terms and better private equity level terms and sponsors and operators.
And what is your typical vetting process looks like? Because you're working with specific operators and evaluating their expertise and bringing your investors into those deals. So share a little bit about what you guys do in order to vet them.
Yeah, so the vetting process is fairly long because there is a formal process that we put together that we have structures and processes for when there comes to an actual deal being presented to us. But before then, there's a little bit of an informal process. You know, I go to a lot of networking events. I go to a lot of large conferences where we meet great sponsors from all over the country. Then there's a bit of a, you know, that dating phase where you're just getting to know them. I'll stay on their email list for a little bit. I'll check out their social media websites. I'll subscribe to all their stuff. And I'll just, there's this slower process of learning these people and how they work, what they think, what their values are, and seeing if that aligns. If that aligns, then we'll be open to taking deals from them and looking at deals that they're doing. Through there, there's a massive due diligence process we have, everywhere from the underwriting to the partnership structures to the legal documents within the market itself. You know, do we believe in the business plan? Do we believe that this asset class is primed for tailwinds versus headwinds? Do we like the area that it's in? You know, there's a very, very, very steep process. And over the course of a month, we typically evaluate between 30 and 60 deals. Of that, we will put between one and three into the next kind of process of due diligence for us, which is a more in-depth review of the actual property, whether it's site visits or it's actually spending money on due diligence and getting, you know, maybe third-party underwriting or doing background checks on different partner groups. So from there, you know, we've had a couple more deals out. So it's this massive process to, before investors, our investors even see a deal or know of it, you know, we've likely gone through hundreds and hundreds of deals already with hundreds of sponsors to land on the ones that we feel very, very good about. So it's a pretty massive process that kind of works its way deeper and deeper into the deal from all the way out from the sponsor level, which could take years to build a good relationship before we start to trust the sponsor.
So for the fund, you started out with multifamily. And so from there, how did you decide to open it up and start diversifying into different asset classes as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, the last few years have been really eye-opening for a lot of people in the residential space who have preached multifamily and its immunity to market conditions and it's the best class and everybody's got a place to live. And, you know, we found that, first of all, different assets can get regulated in different ways. You know, multifamily was very insulated because a lot of people feel like, hey, everybody needs a place to live. It'll always be in demand. You know, and then we found out that the government can tell tenants that they don't need to pay their rent and nothing will happen. And you know, these black swan events do happen. So to me, it was a disservice to just constantly bang that over the heads of our investors and say, hey, multifamily is the way to go. Everybody needs a place to live. Everybody understands apartment buildings because most of us have lived in apartment buildings or at least see them all the time. We get paying rent and you know, we think this massive bigwig owns all the apartments. But when you look at the headwinds and tailwinds of different industries, you look at things like the short-term rental space, how it's been performing versus hotels over the past few years. You look at the trends of reshoring away from China, who's seeing a lot of issues with their production, and South America seeing a lot of benefits to their production. You're also seeing different ways that companies and consumers respond to things, where we call it, you know, just in time to having it on time. I forget the terminology for it, but different ways that people react that will give certain asset classes headwinds or tailwinds. So it was a disservice for us to not be able to diversify and say, hey, we're going to capitalize on these. So we love industrial right now. A lot of the trends of reshoring from China to South America are massive. And I think along the southern border, you're going to see those warehouses and those industrial spaces be huge in demand. Multifamily, I think, will still continue to do well, especially if you can buy them right, which this coming year, we're seeing, you know, what is it, $1.5 trillion of debt will be coming due this year. So that's going to be a great opportunity. And also the short-term rental space, I think, is still poised to grow. We're seeing more institutional involvement there now that it hasn't been quite institutionalized. So there's a really good gap to be early players in that space. So there's a lot of things that excite me. And I think, you know, opening it up to partnerships allows us to get our hands in a little bit of everything.
So what will be your next focus in the upcoming year?
Yeah, this year, you know, apartment buildings, because of the distressed debt coming due, is high on our radar. We're also really looking at mobile home parks as another alternative to housing. That is an asset class that we feel is still poised to do well. Even in down markets, it tends to do very well. So those are two really, really big ones. We're also looking at higher liquidity fund options. So we're looking at private money funds or debt funds that have, you know, 90-day liquidity options so that investors can put their money somewhere, have it grow at a significant rate, but pull that money out when these deals do start coming up and they do start seeing other opportunities to put their money in. So those are probably our three biggest focuses this year. Really holding that liquidity so that we can capitalize on opportunities is big. So parking it in something like a fund, like a short-term debt fund, is really good for that. And then apartment buildings to take advantage of some of the distressed debt. And we would like to push into some mobile home parks as well.
So Justin, how has real estate investing impacted your life?
I love what I do every day. I think that's a massive one. It's entrepreneurship in its own way. You know, we own this business and we have all the highs and lows of entrepreneurs. We have the highs and lows of riding different markets. You eat what you kill in this business, which I love. I love feeling like rewarded for what we do. I love vetting deals. And the thing that really, really, really lights my soul on fire, and I just love doing it every day, is speaking with investors and getting people invested in assets like this. So when you love what you do, it can pay you very well, and you see, can really, really see a future doing it. That I think is priceless. So it's really changed, you know, my life from a work perspective. And of course, when you love your work, you tend to be happier outside of it. So it's been a phenomenal journey for me over the past, it's been about 13, 14 years now.
And if there was one thing you know now about real estate that you wish you knew when you first started, what would that be?
Yeah, I think, you know, the lesson holds true that I talked about earlier. If you want passive income, make sure you're investing in passive income streams. Real estate is glorified all over social media as this great method of passive income. It's just really not true. It's going to tug on your time. It's going to tug on your mental capacity. It does require time, effort, and energy. If you could hire a manager and they do all the work for you, there would be no such thing as a property manager. They would just buy the properties themselves. If they're going to do the work, why wouldn't they just buy it themselves and get all the profit? So if you want passive income, don't buy properties, invest in properties. You buy a property, you're buying yourself a job. So understand what you want before going into it. And, you know that a lot of social media is a little bit of hype to sell their courses. You got to be ready to do the work if you buy properties.
And what is the one thing that sets successful people apart in real estate investing?
I think grit is massive, not just in this business, but any business. You have to be able to delay your gratification. You know, there's been times where we've looked up, like I said, you know, between 30 and 60 deals a month for 6, 7, 8, 9 months, you know, every day, day in and day out. And we're just thinking, oh my God, there's nothing to buy right now. And when we're at our absolute wit's end, that's when we find the diamond in the rough. So anything that's worth having, again, it's going to be very, very hard to get. And the harder it is to get, the better it's going to be to have. So understand that you got to go into it. You got to delay your gratification. You have to put a system and process together that you can follow through day in and day out. And if you trust that process, you marry that system, the outcome is inevitable. But if you're benchmarking your happiness to the outcome happening in a certain time frame, you'll usually be disappointed. So get ready for the journey and ride the process.
Or sometimes you get to that milestone and then you realize like, huh, what's next? And then you don't feel that fulfillment that you initially expected from reaching that next milestone.
It is. And you can keep knocking down those goals and you know, you just have to get the first couple dominoes to fall over. And they're typically the hardest dominoes to push, but momentum's a big factor in this game too. So it can swing with you or it can swing against you. So, you know, be hyper aware of that.
And so Justin, where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah. So if anybody's interested in investing with us, you know, predominantly a lot of our investors are salespeople. That's my background. That's how we kind of look at our sale investing thesis is based around that kind of commission-based professional. Our company's called President's Club Investors. If you go there, I got a lot of free goodies for you. You could check out our retirement calculators, see how fast you can actually replace your income with passive income. An ebook, it's a top secret investing strategy for sales professionals. And I'll actually give you a bonus gift there too, where you can download a tool that's going to help you mitigate a ton of risk in your investing career. So you can check that out, presidentsclubinvestors.com. If you search that up on LinkedIn, you should find me as well. I'm very, very active there.
Awesome. Justin, thank you so much for all of your time today.
I think this was great. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.